All right. Questions?
Anything we covered last class? No? All right.
Well, last class we covered in general the idea of the governor. And now what we're going to do is we're going to focus a little bit on Massachusetts specific factoids pertaining to the executive branch. Now, as we know, the governor represents executive power for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. But truth be told, our governor is not a powerful governor. There are governors in other states that have significantly more authority, more power to control actions and behaviors within their states. Ours, well, John Adams was one of the founding fathers that helped spearhead the war for independence, you know, that pushed for the independence cause. So when he wrote the Constitution for the Commonwealth, he followed the Roman notion of taking the imperium, the power of the kings, and dividing it up and putting it in the hands of many to prevent tyranny. Our governor was one of the first positions, one of the first named officials for our state. In the original charter of 1629, that charter called for the selection of a governor to basically run the day-to-day affairs of the colony. That governor, if you remember, was elected by all freedmen, and they initially would only serve one-year terms. Now, there were no term limits, and many of our early governors were governors for like a decade or so. And that remained the case until the Charter of Massachusetts Bay was suspended. And then we had the Dominion, which was short-lived. But when the Dominion was repealed and we ended up with the Provincial Charter, which brought Plymouth and Massachusetts together, the position of the governor was returned, but the governor was appointed by the king. So the original governor was chosen to govern the colony at the behest of the people. During the provincial period, the governor was a king appointee and had the authority to basically govern in the king's name. And the governor was given the veto power. So even if the colonial assembly tried passing statutes, the governor could veto everything. So when John Adams put together the modern position of governor in the Constitution, he looked to Massachusetts history, and he kind of combined the first 80 years of history and the second 80 years. But as I said, the concern was giving all power to one. So many, or much of the executive authority was divided and shared with, believe it or not, one of 14 different constitutional officers. Our executive branch is headed not just by the governor, but also with the lieutenant governor. There's also the secretary, don't write these down, we'll go through each one. There's also the secretary of the Commonwealth. There's the attorney general. There's the treasurer, receiver general. There's the auditor. And of course, there's the 8-member governor's council. Much of the authority in most governors are divided amongst 14 in Massachusetts. Now, originally, only the governor and lieutenant governor were elected. The idea was, is looking back in colonial history, since the inception, Massachusetts had already elected the governors. So John Adams wrote up Article 2 of the second part of our Constitution. He required that the governor and lieutenant governor be elected. Now, here's the interesting thing. Adams wanted to divide who was responsible for selecting all of the other 12. The idea was as part of the checks and balances to make each of these different positions answerable to different groups or different constituencies. So the governor was directly elected, so the governor would be directly responsible to the people. Originally, the Secretary of the Commonwealth and the Treasurer, originally they were chosen by the general court. All of the reps and all of the senators on a ballot elected those positions. The Attorney General was originally an appointed position. The governor nominated the Attorney General, but the governor's council approved. And originally the governor's council was chosen by the general court, but you had to be a member of the Senate to be on the governor's council. The last position is the auditor. And the auditor was actually established by law in 1849. This is the way the Commonwealth operated, all the way up until 1855. When the Constitution was amended. Oh, I see what I did. 1855, the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution of the Commonwealth, called for annual elections for the Secretary, the Treasurer, the Auditor, and the Governor's Council. So from 1780 until 1855, only the Governor and Lieutenant Governor. After 1855, all of the executive officers would be elected, serving one-year terms. Then in 1919, Constitution amended again. All of the executive officers would be given two-year terms. And then in 1964, the Constitution would be amended again, giving everybody but the governor's council four-year terms. Why? Times changed. So rather than forcing the governor, because to be honest with you, if you get an executive position, like any position of authority, there's a steep learning curve. You can't figure it out in 1 year. You know, sometimes you need 2, 3, 4 years on the job to figure things out. So by 1964, the idea of governors running every 2 years, it didn't make any sense. So the people pushed for an amendment and allowed for the elected officers to serve what they do now, four-year terms. Now, by the way, the official term is that all of these officers serve coterminously.
coterminously,
which basically means all their terms coincide. Their four-year term begins officially at noon on Thursday, following the first Wednesday in January, after the election. At noon on Thursday, following the first Wednesday in January, after the election. Why then?
Don't know. But essentially, it gives time for the lame duck, the outgoing governor, gives them a chance to wrap things up. The first Wednesday in January is when the new general court starts.
So it gives the legislature a chance to get in and pass their rules before the new executive comes in. But I don't have any folklore as to why that particular date was chosen. All right, questions? Well, let's look at what these offices do. And we'll start off with the governor. Who is our governor? Who is the governor of Massachusetts?
Six adults in this room, and we don't know, you don't know who your governor is?
Healy.
Maura Healy, yep, Maura Healy.
Very good. When was she first elected?
2022.
Which means her term is up when?
2026.
We're coming on a state election year. Absolutely. Our Chapter 2, Section 1, Article 1 declares that there shall be, and I quote, a supreme executive magistrate who shall be styled the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And, according to the Constitution, it literally says the title of the governor is to be His Excellency. So even though we have our second female governor, the first was Jane Swift, the Constitution, to my knowledge, has not been amended. So officially, Maura Healy's title is His Excellency. To be a governor, there are actually requirements contained within the Constitution of the Commonwealth. And these requirements are pretty straightforward. You must be a resident of Massachusetts for 7 years prior to taking office. You must be a resident of Massachusetts for 7 years prior to taking office.
And obviously you must be registered to vote. Because in Massachusetts you can't run for office unless you're registered to vote.
But that's it. You don't have to be a natural born citizen. Questions? Governor gets paid as per the Constitution. Currently, Maura Healy's salary is $185,000, plus she receives a $65,000 stipend for housing.
Massachusetts is one of the few states that does not have a governor's mansion.
The reason being,
during the chaos of the 1760s and 1770s, as the Sons of Liberty were engaging in their shenanigans, the governor's mansion, which was once in Boston, was burned to the ground. And in a symbol of defiance, the early Commonwealth, after the new constitution was put in place, decided that they were going to preserve that legacy. Because we don't have, essentially, a noble that lives in a palace. Previously, governors did not get big housing stipends, but when Charlie Baker was governor, it's really funny that the Democrat-controlled general court took advantage of all of the chaos of Trump's election back in 2016, when everyone was suffering from TDS, and in the chaos, the early months of 2017, they fast-tracked a bill that gave them all raises and increased the housing allowance for the governor. Charlie Baker initially said he was going to veto it, but he never did. So Charlie Baker, for the remainder of his terms in office in Morihele, they get basically, well, if you get $65,000, that's more than a minimum wage job, right? Minimum wage job, what? Minimum wage is 15 times 40. That's $600 a month. $600, that's 30. All right, so that's the equivalent of someone who makes $30 an hour. They get that just as a bonus.
Pretty good gig if you can get it. All right, most of the authority from the governor is actually expressed in the Constitution. And I am going to ask, obviously, that you go through and check out the powers so that way you can understand them, which can be found in Chapter 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Here are the major powers. The governor can present a budget. The governor has the ability to amend line items in the budget. So the governor can propose, and then after the House and Senate vote on it, they can go in and they can tweak it. We talked about that. The governor, because the governor is a citizen, can recommend legislation. Of course, if the governor uses a veto, as we covered, it can be overridden. Governors can be involved in negotiating the terms of a loan. Massachusetts as a government is allowed to borrow money. The governor is allowed to be involved in those negotiations. The governor may also call the legislature in for a special session. But if you recall, when we were talking about the general court, I had mentioned the fact that we have a state legislature that's pretty much a full-time. So they're pretty much always in session. But again, the easiest example to think of is if they adjourn because it's the holidays and something crazy happens, the governor can call them in. The governor may also force the adjournment of a legislative session, but they must get the advice and consent of the governor's council. This is something that dates back to the English Civil War and Magna Carta and some of the principles of the old English constitutional system. Best example was the start of the English Civil War was triggered because members of Parliament basically impeached
King Charles's wife, accusing her for being a closet Catholic, and basically accused her of giving the king bad advice.
Well, the king attempted to suspend Parliament, and that triggered the Civil War. So John Adams, knowing his history, basically said, well, you don't want the executive to have that power. But what happens if the general court is getting out of control?
Well, you can kind of give him the authority, but again, you got to check and balance. You got to get a majority of the votes in the Governor's Council to approve it.
Now, technically, the governor is the president of the Governor's Council, but the governor doesn't get a vote. They only can preside. The governor can grant pardons or commute sentences with the advice and consent of the Governor's Council. Trying to think of the other big ones. The governor has the power to appoint or remove most department heads and the heads of government agencies.
Generally speaking, there are some statutory requirements that require like kind of consent of the Senate or consent of the general court, depends upon the nature of the office.
The governor can nominate all judges. Once again, with the advice and consent of the Governor's Council. And last but not least, the governor technically is the commander-in-chief of the Massachusetts National Guard. Those are the big ones.
Similar to the powers of the president, but again, in some ways, different. Obviously, I ask that you look at the Constitution. Any questions on any of those? Those are the major ones. There's some minor ones, but those are really the big ones.
All right. Seeing none. Now, in 1966, the Constitution was amended, and it would give the governor the power to completely reorganize and restructure the government of the Commonwealth. Because basically, you had the governor, the lieutenant governor, the governor's council, and the secretaries, and then all of the bureaucracies. And all of the bureaucracies technically reported directly to the governor. Well, as the size of the government of Massachusetts grew, and the nature of the bureaucracy became more and more complex, the general court decided the best thing that could happen was to create a cabinet. Similar to the cabinet system used by the president. Meaning,
instead of each of the secretaries being the heads of their own little worlds, they would gather with the heads of the most powerful and influential commissions and would meet with the governor somewhat regularly.
There would also be specialized positions that the governor could appoint. And today, there are 9 members that make up the cabinet. And I'm just going to read through them real quick. You don't need to remember them. There is the Secretary of Administration and Finance. There's the Secretary of Education. There's the Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs. There's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. There's the Secretary of Housing and Economic Development. There's the Secretary of Labor and Workforce Development. There's the Secretary of Public Safety and Security. There's the Secretary of Transportation. And there is the Secretary of Technology, Services, and Security. Those positions served as the tops of umbrellas to kind of oversee multiple bureaucratic agencies that fall below. Now, visually, it's a logistic nightmare, and I know in your textbook they give you a model visual aid to kind of understand the bureaucratic structure as they exist in a general state. Questions? All right. That's 9. That's wrong. Update that. All right. Governor also has the authority, the broad authority, to appoint individuals to boards and commissions, which were created solely by the executive branch. He also has the authority to appoint heads and members of some of the boards created by the legislature. And he also has the authority to appoint heads of commissions mandated by federal law. You know, sometimes there's a special commission that needs to be created in the state level for the state to receive a federal grant. To keep it as general as possible, some members are part-time, some members are full-time, some members are salaried, some members volunteer their time. Some serve for time periods based on their appointment. Some serve until the commission work is complete. You know, to make it very simple, they're different. They vary. And why do I explain it that way? Well, today there's over 500 boards and commissions that operate in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Just for these boards alone, the governor has to appoint something like 3,500 people. And of course, this number doesn't include all the task forces, or the commissions, or the groups, or the boards that are within the different government agencies. It's big, it's vast, it's complicated. But that's the reason why 1 out of every 10 people in Massachusetts works for the government. Now, the only exception to the appointments are the major state agencies and the major departments, like the Massachusetts Department of Revenue Services, you know, Massachusetts version of the IRS. You know, the Secretary of the Treasury, they serve coterminous with the governor. So their term starts when the governor starts, they end when the governor's ends. So what's the result? Well, the irony is that the governor is supposed to be the chief executive and supposed to make sure that all the laws are enforced. But truth be told, there's so many people that work in the executive branch that the governor can't possibly oversee all operations. So this is where it goes back where I said before, I think last class, you know, the governor's policy focus typically is those agencies that the governor oversees. So if it's something important to them, you know, they'll make sure that particular agency or board or commission, you know, is doing the work up to the level that the governor desires. And if it's an agency that's not important to the governor, often they're just left to their own devices. Questions? All right, the last little bit that I have on the governor is the line of succession. What happens if the governor dies or resigns or is removed? Well, by law, there is a line of succession. I thought I had it as clicks, but I don't. The first in line, who's the obvious? If something happens to the governor, who's the obvious successor? Lieutenant governor. So governor resigns, removed, whatever, lieutenant governor comes in. There was a string of Republican governors that didn't make it through their terms. Bill Weld left. I think he went to go be, this was in the 90s. I think he became like the ambassador to Ireland or something like that. So he resigned and his lieutenant governor, Paul Cellucci, came in. Paul Cellucci filled out the rest of the term, ran for election in his own right, but then didn't fill out his own term. He was like appointed the ambassador to Canada or something like that. Like George W. Bush. So when he resigned, Jane Swift, who was our first woman governor, was serving as his lieutenant governor. She came in and served as acting governor. But since Jane Swift, Mitt Romney served his 4 years, Deval Patrick served his 8 years, Charlie Baker served his 8 years, and it looks like Mara is at least going to serve all 4 years of her first term. All right, right behind the lieutenant governor is the Secretary of the Commonwealth. So if governor goes and lieutenant governor goes, next up is the Secretary of the Commonwealth. After the Secretary of the Commonwealth is the Attorney General. After the Attorney General is the Treasurer and Receiver General, Secretary of the Treasury. Or the Treasury Secretary? Just call it Treasurer. That's probably the best way to put him in there, Treasurer. And then if something happens to the Treasurer, then the last in line is the Auditor. Now, here is the catch. If the governor, the elected governor, leaves, whoever succeeds them does not become the governor. They are technically serving as acting governor. So the expectation is that they're still going to do their job. So if it's, say, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, they're still going to serve as the Secretary, but when there's a need, they act as the capacity of a governor.
So then wait till the next election?
Yes. There is no allowance under the Constitution for there to be a special election to fill the vacancy of a governor's position. Just hasn't been put in. You would think it would make sense, yeah?
Yeah.
Because if there's a vacancy for the a senator or a representative, you could have a special election, but not the governor.
Yeah. also seems stupid to have somebody doing two jobs.
No, it really does, because that either means the job that they have is kind of meaningless, or serving as governor is kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
All right, questions? All right. Next up is the LT, Lieutenant Governor. Anyone know the name of our current Lieutenant Governor? Her name is Kim Driscoll. Kim Driscoll. She was a former either city councilor or selectman from one of the North Shore towns. I don't remember where she's from. Now, like the governor, which was created by the charter for Massachusetts Bay, interestingly enough, after the charter was granted, King Charles actually required the government of Massachusetts Bay to amend their charter to include a position of lieutenant governor. Why do you think? Where was Massachusetts Bay? And where was the king?
Two different continents.
Just separated by?
Water.
Water. And what was here when Massachusetts Bay was founded?
The natives.
Yeah. And like Plymouth.
Okay.
But there really wasn't much of anything else. So in all likelihood, what could happen to the governor? Or anybody else? Could die. Be killed by the Indians, or drink infected water, or could be struck by lightning, or, you know, there were no hospitals. So the king brilliantly advised Massachusetts Bay, hey, you gotta have somebody just to have a heartbeat, just in case. And ironically, that's the primary purpose of this position. Being lieutenant governor, even today, you don't really have authority. You don't really have constitutional power. Your job literally is to have a heartbeat. By the way, the same is true of the vice president. And that's the reason why the vast majority of vice presidents throughout the history of our country have basically been useless. Because their only job is not to die. Just in case something happens to the POTUS. Well, the same is true with the lieutenant governor.
Do all states have a lieutenant governor?
Yes. Today, yes. Now here's the catch, though. Each lieutenant governor, like vice president, their actual responsibilities depends upon the governor. So, when Charlie Baker was governor, he relied heavily on Karen Polito. They operated kind of like a team. So, either one or both of them was constantly going around the Commonwealth. I think the Baker-Polito administration actually visited all 351 municipalities in Massachusetts during their 8 years. I remember Karen bragging about that once. The dynamic is similar with Driscoll and Healy. They are kind of acting like a team. And it seems that Driscoll, though, is out in public more often than Healy is. But they're out. They're always trying to, at the very least, try to go to some communities. Lieutenant Governor is elected coterminously with the governor. So, 4-year term. And to serve as Lieutenant Governor, it's the same requirements as being governor. You must live in Massachusetts for 7 years before taking office. and you must be registered to vote. Oh, by the way, so what's the youngest that someone could be elected governor or lieutenant governor?
35.
No, that's president. Could be 18.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, the only requirement is you have to be registered to vote. You can't register to vote before you're 18.
What was the youngest?
Probably someone in their 20s. Maybe 30s. I don't know. We've had a lot of governors. All right. Like the Constitution establishes an official title of His Excellency for the governor, the official title of the lieutenant governor in the Constitution is His Honor. I've already talked about this. Primary job of lieutenant governor is to have a heartbeat. If something happens to the governor, death, resignation, removal, then the lieutenant governor comes in. But the lieutenant governor only serves as acting governor. Acting governor. Now, in all honesty, this is just a technicality. Because the acting governor still has the power to engage in all of the duties, rights, and privileges of the governor. The only thing they don't get is the title. I'm guessing, and this is just my logical guess, knowing the little I do about John Adams, I'm guessing he wanted to always make it known that to have the title of governor, you must be elected by the people. Now, by the way, the same is not true for the president. If something happens to the president, death, resignation, removal, the vice president does fully become president. So the nine times it's happened, I think it's nine times that it's happened, when the vice president came up, they became full of the president. Now, the lieutenant governor does have a role that is significant. Like the governor, they are a member of the governor's council. And more often than not, it's the lieutenant governor that presides over the governor's council sessions. Because the governor is usually away doing governor stuff. Oh, I forgot to mention salary. Lieutenant governor is a paid position. They make $185,000, just like the governor, but they are not given the housing allowance. Questions? All right. Next up is the governor's council. Very, very unique feature. Massachusetts is one of only two states that has a governor's council. The other state is New Hampshire, and they copied us. But our governor council actually has more authority to rein in the governor than New Hampshire's governor's council. So that means 48 states do not. To make sure that there's an odd number, the voting members of the governor's council are the eight elected members plus the lieutenant governor. The Constitution requires the governor's council to advise the governor. Like the Gov and the LT, there are eligibility requirements. Must be registered to vote. And You must be a resident of the district that you are going to serve for 5 years. We vote for members of the Governor's Council through districts. Their districts are based on combining 5 contiguous senatorial districts. So we know there are 40 members of the Senate. Well, you take 5 senators' districts and put them together, and that is the district that elects a governor's council. They are elected every 2 years. Now, unlike the governor and the lieutenant governor, this is a part-time gig. I actually thought about running for office, but I couldn't raise enough money. And the pay is not that great. Salary is $36,000. But here's the catch. They only meet one day a week. They meet on Wednesdays. On Wednesdays that are not holidays. At noon. And their meeting typically lasts 2 or 3 hours. That's it. So it's a pretty damn good hourly rate. I'll admit that. Now, their major job is to basically serve as a check on the governor. Although, in the age of partisanship, the amount of checking that they actually do is limited. But the idea was is that this council has the actual constitutional authority to say no to a governor. They must, by a majority vote, approve all appointments by the governor, particularly those that have quasi-judicial functions. So, for example, in addition to me being an attorney, I'm also a notary public. You can't become a notary public in Massachusetts without a vote of approval by the Governor's Council. And it is a pain in the tuchus because they only meet one meeting a week. And sometimes if they don't have anything on an agenda, they don't have a meeting. So my last notary commission, if you become a notary, you're a notary for 7 years. My notary commission actually expired because by law, they only have to send you the renewal form 1 month before your term is up. So I got the form in, I mailed it out the next day. It took them 5 weeks to approve it. It's awful. So I actually could not do any lawyerly work for a week. But that's just the reality of the gig. But it was nice. I got a nice approval letter that was signed by the member of the Governor's Council that's representative of my district, Paul the Jeweler or something like that. I don't know, it was pretty cool. Governor's Council must also give their consent on all judges. Different than at the United States government level. The president can nominate members of the Supreme Court with the advice and consent of the Senate. Well, in Massachusetts, they have to get the advice and consent of the Governor's Council. So, again, just bringing you the realities of living in a one-party state, this means that the Democrat governor and the Democrat governor's council is only going to appoint Democratic judges. Of course, in states like Utah, although Utah doesn't have a governor's council, you know, it's the exact opposite. That's just the nature of partisanship. Governor's Council also has to vote in approval for all pardons, all commutations of sentences. The governor just can't, you know, let people out of jail. Governor's Council has to sign off on it. Governor's Council also must sign off on all payments that come out of the state treasury. So every warrant that has spending items, it has to be voted on and approved by the governor's council. And just like you guys at town meeting, you know, that was Article 1, you know, that was a spending measure. Selectmen can't spend the money, it has to come with the vote of town meeting. Well, it's a similar process. All right, those are the big four powers. Questions? By the way, no term limits. We don't have term limits for any office in Massachusetts. All right. Next is the Secretary of the Commonwealth. Current Secretary of the Commonwealth has been Secretary of the Commonwealth for as long as I can remember, is Bill Galvin. The primary job of the Secretary of the Commonwealth is to be the keeper of the records. Every single department report, every single election return, not only for the state, but for every city in town, every single appointment made by the governor, every single act of the general court, every single birth, every single death, every single driver's license, dog license, all of the records are kept by the Secretary of the Commonwealth. Let me do this, because at some point I'm going to redo this and put pictures in. So, if you notice, on this map right here, that's not where we want. Here is the State House. There is where the Secretary of the Commonwealth resides, in a building at 1 Ashburton Place. And how much records does he have to keep? Come on, open this one up. I want to see this picture. There we go. So look, here's the Golden Dome, Beacon Hill. Here is 1 Ashburton Place. In this tower that you can see if you ever go to the Boston Common, this is where all of the state records are archived. By the way, I believe they have a basement vault that goes down 10 stories. So if you ever go into Boston and you see this structure, remember, that's where all the documentation on your existence in this state is kept. While originally it was an appointed position, as we know, beginning in 1855, it became an elected position. And in 1966, when the Constitution was amended, this became a four-year term, coterminous with the governor. The Secretary of State is also second in line behind the Lieutenant Governor. To serve as Secretary of the Commonwealth, you must be a resident of Massachusetts, registered to vote. There is no residency requirements. So long as you live in Massachusetts prior to the election, and you are registered to vote prior to the election, you could run for Secretary of the Commonwealth. Bill Galvin gets a good paycheck. He gets paid $187,000. And he has the authority to appoint all of his assistant secretaries. I've been in one Ashburton place when I ran for state rep. The Bureau of Elections is in that building. And there's also an office that is where you basically get sworn in to become a notary public. So I've been in that building,
well, three times.
Questions? No? Well, Massachusetts also has a top lawyer, the Attorney General. And our current Attorney General is Andrea Campbell. Now, because I had two of you join me at town meeting, it's Andrea Campbell that has been using the power of the state to basically sue towns that don't vote for the MBTA communities. She is borderline tyrannical, in my opinion. Because if you read the original law, towns were given the ability to opt out. Well, under the Healey administration with Campbell as AG, she basically decided if you opt out, that's a defiance of the law and you will be sued. So Milton is one of the towns that is dealing with this lawsuit being sued. And there's a couple other towns as well. So you guys, if you heard some of the speakers that were speaking in favor of Sutton voting for it, they gave reference to the fact that the town could be punished, could be fined, could be sued. They're referring to our current Attorney General's behavior and actions. She is the Chief Legal Officer. She is supposed to represent the state in all litigation involving the Commonwealth and its offices. Now, FYI, Maura Healey was our previous Attorney General. And it was Maura Healey who used her position as AG to compel the previous governor to impose some of the egregious restrictions that came down when Massachusetts was put on lockdown during the COVIDs. When she was AG, Healey actually went before the Massachusetts Judicial Court, the SJC, and used a case from like 1911 as precedent, in which Massachusetts basically seized somebody who I think had smallpox. Or maybe it was the Spanish flu, I don't remember. But basically locked him up and kept him contained to spread to stop the spread. Well, Healey used that one case as grounds to lock the whole state down. Forgetting that the whole significance of that case was the fact that the person who was contained actually had it. But AG, when she was, well, Healey, she was convinced the best way to do it is lock everybody down. So the Attorney General, why am I using these two examples? The Attorney General in Massachusetts has always been a powerful figure. And that's the same in all of the states. So if you ever hear a situation where a state is suing the United States government, it's usually spearheaded by the Attorney Generals. Now, Attorney Generals are elected. Not only must they be 18 years old, not only must they be registered to vote in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but there's one additional requirement. I could be Attorney General, but none of you could. In order to be Attorney General, you must be a member of the Massachusetts Bar. So you have to be a registered voter, and you have to be a lawyer. You have to go to law school, you have to sit and pass the bar exam. And you have to maintain good standing. So you have to renew your license every single year. Question.
What is that process like, renewing your license?
Not that hard. I think my license expires in June. It's a lot easier than renewing the notary, because you can basically do it online.
How much do I gotta pay?
I think I pay $700 a year for my renewal. And you know the funny thing is I spend all that money.
Driver's licenses are better quality than law licenses.
Bizarre.
Get crusty in there trying to take that out.
Oh, by the end? So I've had this. Oh, I apologize. Yeah, June. So, yeah, this is still kind of clean because it's June. Wait till you see it till like next April. Yeah, yeah. Gets gross. And I keep thinking because you can get like the thick plastic business cards. I thought about with Vistaprint, I thought about just printing one. Kind of like taking a picture and printing it one, but then I'd have to do that every single year, and that just seemed more like a hassle. So, but the funny thing is when I do go to court, so I don't have to go through the metal detector. So there was a point where you couldn't bring your cell phones in, you couldn't bring computers in. They've laxed that up, but I could go in if I'm carrying a firearm. I could bring my gun into the courthouse because I have an LTC and I have a law license. So, because I'm an officer of the court. So, yeah, it's pretty funny, though, when all the people are waiting in line, and I take it out, and yeah. I'm able to go around.
When I went down to Cambridge...
Yeah, because you went with the guy that you were helping out when you were in high school, right?
Yeah. He literally just pulled out his license.
Yeah.
He just walked in.
Yeah, so it's no big deal. It's funny, I did that when I, had to go to jury duty. And, oh, okay, I'm a lawyer. Okay, I'll let you go. Because who the hell wants to wait in line? Go through a metal detector, take your shoes off, take your belt off, just ask. All right, bar exam. Attorney General. Yeah, if you want to go to law school does not prepare you for the bar exam, and the bar exam doesn't prepare you to become a lawyer. Law school takes 3 to 4 years. The bar exam, I don't know how much it costs today, maybe like $1,800. It's a 2-day exam. And you either pass or you fail it. It's wicked hard. Hardest exam I ever took. One of my buddies took him 9 times to pass the bar exam. I passed it my first try. And I didn't even study. I didn't have time. I figured I had the money, so I'm like, I would just go see what it's all about. Because if you don't pass it, they actually tell you what you got right and what you got wrong. So then I could knew what to study. But if you pass it, they don't tell you what you got. They don't even tell you your grade. It's just like, congratulations, you passed the bar exam. So, go me. All right. Actually, I'll be honest with you. One of my buddies who was a lawyer, if you're ever thinking about it, gave me the best advice. He said, when I was in law school,
don't worry about law school. Start studying for the bar exam. So I really didn't pay attention much as to what was going on in the classes, but I always was taking practice tests and, you know, trying to remember all the elements of all the different laws. So ultimately, oh, and then I specialized. There was like four of the six major areas that I was interested in, so that's what I paid attention to. And the other stuff I didn't care about. So I just played the odds. All right, anyways, Attorney General. Required to give legal advice. Massachusetts is one of only three states that the general court can actually contact the Attorney General's office in advance of making the law and put in a request about the constitutionality of the proposed bill. Cities and towns can do the same thing. So to give you an example, the two guys that went to town meeting heard. Our town planner mentioned that she sent our proposed bylaw to the Attorney General's office to see if it was satisfactory. Well, the AG's office will provide that. And it's a useful tool in a sense that it can save taxpayer money. And the Attorney General's office also has to sign off on anything that comes out of town meetings and city councils. So all bylaws, all zoning laws must be sent to the Attorney General. The Attorney General's office has the right to reject it. And I'll go back to the example that I gave you that Milbury got hit with. Milbury was trying to stop a methadone rehab clinic from being opened in their town. They actually passed a bylaw that outright banned it. Well, instead of sending it to the AG's office in advance, they decided to go to town meeting with it, vote on it, and then send it in. To which the AG's office shut it down, said you cannot ban this type of business in those areas in town that are zoned for similar types of activity. You can't discriminate. The town didn't care, the town ended up trying to sue, and they ended up losing. So the taxpayers of Milbury ended up having to pay something like $70,000-$80,000 when all they had to do was send it to the AG's office in advance.
Because once the AG certifies something, it basically becomes law. Questions?
All right, Treasurer, Receiver General.
Treasurer and Receiver General. This is the technical name for our Secretary of the Treasury. Our current treasurer is Deb Goldberg. I know nothing about her. I can't say good, I can't say bad. I just know her name. But I haven't heard any controversy in the news, so she must be doing an okay job. Her job is to control the money. She receives all tax revenue, she invests money, she makes sure that all the bills are paid. The treasurer is the only constitutional officer that has the authority to take money out of the state accounts. Even the governor cannot do that. State law also requires that all tax dollars are deposited within the treasury.
It has its own computer system. It doesn't rely on banks. The state treasurer's office also supervises the all tax and spending activity of the cities and towns. So every single year, we have to send our budget. We send it to the treasurer's office for documentation. And then every single year, Sutton, we get our books audited just to make sure that we're not even remotely hiding anything or engaged in any illegality. Well, we send our auditor's reports to the treasurer's office. If there's any money left over in the budget, and we'll talk about the budget for the final, if there's any leftover money, that becomes what's called free cash. Well, if we end up with $2 million unspent, we have to make sure that money's certified. So in other words, we have to prove to the treasurer's office that, look, we didn't steal the money. But at the same time, we paid all our bills. We just took in too much. Well, that money, before you can use it, has to be certified. All of that goes through the treasurer's office. The last thing, the treasurer also manages the lottery. There was actually a controversy. Which treasurer was it? This had to be back in the 90s, I think. I can't remember their name. But I believe, if I remember sort of this correctly, we had a treasurer that was in charge of the lottery, and like, two of his close relatives won, like, the mega bucks. The mass lottery thing. And there was a lot of, like, whoa, what's going on? Then there was another treasurer who used lottery advertisements to kind of help him serve also as, like, re-election campaign ads. So, you know, a little bit of corruption. So there have been times in our state's history where the treasurer, the keeper of the money, has gotten themselves into a little bit of controversy. But like I said, as far as I know, Miss Goldberg is doing a fine job. I haven't heard anything. Lastly, so an elected position, 4-year term, coterminous with the governor. Qualifications, must be a resident of Massachusetts, registered to vote. And last but not least, the auditor. The auditor for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has gotten herself a lot of attention since she was first elected back in 2022. Our current auditor is Diana DiZoglio. She is the one that had the ballot question back in 2024 to audit the legislature. The constitutional powers of the auditor is to oversee all government funds. Their job is to make sure that all monies have been dispersed according to the laws. But their job is also to review the money that comes in and the money comes out for all government departments. Well, guess what part of our government hasn't allowed itself to be audited in nearly 30 years? The Great General Court of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So, ironically, she herself was a former state rep. She actually served under the Golden Dome. She saw the corruption. So when she became auditor, she managed to get a ballot question on Massachusetts. This is one of the few ballot questions that something like 75% of Massachusetts residents voted for. But yet, our general court has refused the will of the people. And by the way, this is a bipartisan rejection. all of the D's and almost all of the R's voted not to allow her to do her job. So how much money is our state legislature spending? Where's the money going? Don't know. So I have a feeling that this is going to allow Diana to possibly run for governor against Mara Healey. And she may have a good chance of winning. Because all she wants to do is force transparency. All right. Like all the other officers, this is the last bit because I can see I'm out of time. I thought we were going to get done early, but I went off on a couple of tangents. Apologize. 4-year term, must be registered to vote in Massachusetts. Now, seeing how everybody but one is here, 4 of you took the exam, and 2 of you who are here did not. You must contact me and get your exam done by Friday, or like the person who didn't take it the first time, you'll get a 0 on it. All right? Please do not forget, because as I said last time, it's not fair to everybody else. I can't release the grades until I have a grade for everybody in the book. That's just the way Blackboard works. See you all on Thursday.
Thank you.